You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Meikle in New York. And this, actually, I'm answering two questions. I told a fib. There was one question that came in and then a subsequent email with a second question. So I'm going to tackle both at the same time. So the question is about setting limits and specifically about how it feels to a degree that there could be some manipulation or coercion going on. And so asking for some clarification there. And then the second question is ADHD diagnosis and behavior and how to handle that when the child comes in for sessions. So, Meikle, thank you so much for the questions and we'll dive in. So the first one, I have a question about setting limits. When you say, if you do X, you choose Y, let me stop right there and say, if you do X is more of a threat than a choice. So we would want to make sure that we say, if you choose X, then you choose Y. And that is only in an ultimate limit setting scenario. So the first three times that the limit is set, it would just be, you can choose this or you can choose this, which do you choose? If the child is unwilling or unable to comply after three rounds, then we move to ultimate choice giving, which is the if then. So if you choose this, then you choose this. If you choose this, then you choose this. Which do you choose? So just so everyone's clear on that, everyone understands limit setting, there's no if-thens. Three times through, move to ultimate limit setting. And we always use the word choose every time on both sides of that. Okay, so now back to the question. When you say, if you choose X, you choose Y, I'm wondering if that can be confusing for a child. For example, if a child has difficulty separating from mom to come into the playroom, and I say, if you choose to stay in the waiting room, you're choosing for mom to wait in the car. The child might respond, I'm not making mom stay in the car, you are. I'm just choosing not to leave her. It feels like subtle manipulation or coercion with an agenda. Could you clarify how this isn't invalidating for a child? Okay, so we have to be really clear on the why behind limit setting, the why behind choice giving, and the outcomes that the child gains from being exposed to both. So let's start with why behind limit setting. We reflect the child's feelings. You didn't indicate that, Meikle, in your email. So I'm hoping that that means that you are in fact saying, you're really not comfortable going back to the playroom yet, but you know that our special playtime is for the playroom. That's the A and the C of limit setting. So if we're not doing that, then I do agree with you that the child can feel invalidated. The whole premise of limit setting is to say, I completely get what you're feeling, thinking, wanting, needing, desiring, experiencing right now. That's why we lead with the reflection. So we start there, then we set the neutral limit. So you're not wrong for whatever we've just validated. You're not wrong for not wanting to play. You're not wrong for not wanting to leave mom. You're not wrong for throwing blocks at my face. You're not wrong for telling me you hate me, whatever. So there's, you know, feelings are always valid, right? Needs, wants, feelings, desires, they're always acceptable and valid, but sometimes behavior isn't. In this scenario, if the child is choosing not to go back to the playroom, I would not default to, if you choose to stay in the waiting room, you're choosing for mom to wait in the car. I would only say that if mom is not able to stay disengaged and is somehow interfering with the therapeutic process. But going with this scenario, we have to make sure that we're acknowledging the feeling first. You really wish that you could just hang out with mom this whole hour, but you know that our special playtime is just for you and me. You really are not ready to go back to the playroom yet, but you know that our special playtime is for in the playroom. We have to lead with the A and the C of the ACT limit, right? Then we can move to the choices. So if after three times, and there's a reason why we would move to an ultimate limit in this scenario, then we would say, if you choose to come back to the playroom, you choose for mom to wait in the lobby. If you choose not to come back to the playroom, you choose for mom to wait in the car because this special playtime is just for you and me. Which do you choose? Notice how I worked in, because our special playtime is just for you and me. That's the why. So when you said it feels like subtle manipulation or coercion with an agenda, it's not. It's just fact. Our special playtime is just for us. And so if you're choosing not to come back to the playroom where it can be just you and me, then mom is going to wait in the car because our playtime is just for you and me. Sometimes we throw in the why to help a child understand the reason behind the limit. Now, let's go back to the why behind choices. When we give choices, it empowers children. They feel a measure of control. They have a sense of power over the circumstance. And they learn that actions have consequences. So in this scenario, there's no manipulation. There's no coercion. There's no agenda. The child has complete control over the outcome. So the child can choose to stay in the lobby and choose for mom to wait in the car, or the child can choose to come back to the playroom and choose for mom to wait in the lobby. The child ultimately is in complete control of the outcome. That's the entire premise. So we validate when we limit set, we give power and control when we give choices, and there's no invalidation whatsoever. It's actually very respectful of a child's experience. I'm here. I hear you. I understand. I care and I delight in you. I can't always solve your problems. I can't always make you happy. We're not always going to agree. All of that is expressed. Be with attitudes and what the be with attitudes do not convey. All of that is expressed in a scenario like you're describing, Mikkel. It also is very clear that we have the child's interests and we're trying to respect where the child is. I'm not forcing you to come back to the playroom. But if you're choosing to stay out and want to play Uno with mom in the lobby, that's not what our playtime is about. So you're choosing for mom to wait in the car because our playtime is just for you and me. If it is presented in a neutral, factual way, there is no manipulation, there's no coercion. It is returning responsibility to the child. It is providing power and control to the child, and it is validating to the child. Those are our goals always in a scenario like that. Hope that that's helpful. Okay, and then the second question. I've been working with a 9-year-old for 6 sessions. The parents have shared concerns about his difficulties with impulse control and emotional regulation. My approach has been grounded in unconditional acceptance and non-directive, but due to his presentation and challenges, I find myself needing to set frequent limits. For example, when he arrives, he wants to run around the circular hallway without me, explore every playroom that is open, and bring toys into our room, or show his mom something mid-session. When I remind him of the limit, he'll innocently say, "I forgot." Each time I think I'll establish the structure for our sessions and that things will settle down, but he comes up with new creative ideas that require redirection. I'm questioning whether I'm being helpful by setting these limits session after session, especially since I imagine he experiences similar boundaries at school and home. I want the therapy space to feel different for him, but I'm not sure how to achieve that balance. Okay, really helpful question. And something that we all struggle with because we all have kids that will test boundaries. Now, let's start at the beginning though. If a child is testing boundaries, we know that they are stuck in a state of dysregulation. No child purposefully breaks limits. No child purposely refuses to comply. If a child is unwilling or unable to abide by limits that have been set, it's because they cannot at that particular moment. This too shall pass. Okay? So you have to be patient. You have to trust the process. You have to know that sometimes it's gradual. A child has to practice what it feels like to hear limits. They have to practice what it feels like to comply with limits. They have to practice what it feels like to adhere to limits. This is not a skill that we're born with. So I think that's really helpful to keep in mind just from the get-go. Now, when he arrives, he runs around the circular hallway, explores all the playrooms, brings toys into our room, etc. Okay, so we have to go back to what are the reasons we set limits. I have to be safe. You have to be safe. Toys can't be broken on purpose. Property can't be damaged. In this scenario, none of those things seem to be violated. However, this could be a clinic scenario where it's disruptive to other clients, or he's taking toys out of other people's playrooms and they're not yours to use, or whatever. Now, in the case of he wants to show his mom something mid-session, we'll get to that. That actually is a limit. But the other ones, if you are feeling pressure because of expectations of your environment, then you would need to make that the why behind setting the limit. Because in those scenarios, you're not actually in the playroom yet. Playroom limits are, I have to be safe, you have to be safe, toys can't be broken, property can't be damaged. In this scenario, you're not even in the playroom yet. So you might have to say, you really would like to run around before we go into our playroom, but there are other people in sessions. So you can choose to skip to the playroom or you can choose to crawl to the playroom. Which do you choose? And notice that the focus becomes you're going to the playroom, not running all over the place. And notice that it becomes if you need to get energy out, you can crawl or skip. All right, with the taking toys. You'd really like to grab that snake, but that's not part of my playroom, so that's not for playing with. But you can choose to use the snake in my room, or you can choose to find something else that you would like to play with in my room. Which do you choose? So notice that in all of these scenarios, I'm providing him with the why while I'm setting the limit. There are other people playing right now, and it's disrupting them. That's not for us to use because that's not my snake. If you just say the snake's not for bringing in, the hallway isn't for running in, it doesn't really explain or communicate to the child the root of why the limit is being set. So I think that will be really helpful, Meikle, in the communication because he needs to understand that you're not arbitrarily setting limits. As far as wanting to go show mom something mid-session, wow, that was a lot of SHs. That was hard to say. So he wants to go out and show mom something in the midst of the session. You would set a limit on that in this way. You really are excited to show mom that, but we still have 20 minutes left. You can choose to show her when we're all done, or you can choose to tell her about it when we're all done. Which do you choose? And notice again, it becomes, we have 20 minutes left. So these are all scenarios where you can set that limit. Now, let's get to your final question. I'm questioning whether I'm being helpful by setting these limits session after session, especially since I imagine he experiences similar boundaries at school and home. We do not have the ability to provide safety and security without limits. Limits provide safety and security for our kids. He clearly has a hard time feeling safe in relationships, likely because of the way his dysregulation is handled. He probably gets punished. He probably gets yelled at. He probably gets criticized. He probably gets berated. He probably gets lectured to. He probably fill in the blank. You are doing none of those things. You're staying neutral. You're staying calm. You're validating him. You're setting neutral expectations and you're providing him with control over the outcome. This is something foreign to most kids. So especially dysregulated kids, they have to go through this process many, many times because it's so strange. What do you mean I get to choose? What do you mean you're not going to yell at me? What do you mean you're not going to rip the snake out of my hand and take it back to the room yourself? What do you mean you're not going to restrain me before I go running through the hallway? They're not used to the freedom and the responsibility that CCPT provides. So it takes them a while to figure it out. That's why we trust the process. That's why we're patient. So when you said, I want the therapy space to feel different for him, it already does. But here's a really helpful ninja trick that I've established over the years. You remind kids of the limit that's already been set rather than setting it all over again. So, oh, it looks like you're ready to run down the hall, but you know that the hallways aren't for running in. Oh, you're thinking about grabbing that toy from so-and-so's room, but you remember that the toys in my playroom are for playing with. You know, you remember. Once they've already been established, it can be a little bit of a refresher rather than that punitive limit setting that we want to avoid. Because yes, sometimes it does feel like when all we do is set limits, it's like, oh my gosh, I just do nothing but set limits with this kid. So sometimes it's helpful when it's already been established multiple times. We just lead with that. Now, if he still runs down the hallway, go through full ACT. If he still goes in and grabs that toy from someone else's room, still go through all of ACT. But to start, we can lead with, oh, you're thinking about running down the hallway, but you know the hallway isn't for running in. And oftentimes they'll go, I know. And then they correct their behavior. They control themselves. You said he always says, I forgot. That's his scapegoat. Oh, I forgot. So if you lead with, you know, or you remember, and then remind him of the limit, it's likely that he will probably be able to comply because it's a gentle nudge toward self-control before he completely gives in to the impulse. All right, Meekle in New York, I hope that was helpful. Thank you so much for the questions. And if you all would like to reach out to me, please do. I love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. I'm really looking forward to the Mississippi meetup, the podcast meetup, and also the Mississippi conference this weekend. So I hope that I'm able to see some of you. Really looking forward to spending time with you all. And then I'll be in Virginia next month. So if you're close to Virginia, get ready to come hang out with me there too. Love y'all. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.